couple of notes and comments. Aggie mentioned to me that I should give you some reading if you're interested to learn a little bit before the lectures, which is always a hard thing because I don't know exactly what I'm gonna cover. And I teach the same way as I cook. I never follow a recipe exactly, but I'll give you a rough guide of things to be read. So for today, if I write KLM, this is the K. La Flamme Mosca book that I mentioned yesterday. If somebody cannot find it, either Aggie can.
I've put it on the wiki already. All the links.
Okay, perfect. And you'll find them in the library. Chapter 4 and 5. Okay, so that's Tuesday. Tomorrow, Nilsson and Chuang. Section 7.4.
Yes.
Thursday, there's no book, but there's a paper by Myers and La Flamme, and it's, you can find it, it's published, but it's an archive, quantum, PH 0512104. Friday, Nilsson and Chuang, section 7.7. So today we'll get a little bit more basics on quantum information. Tomorrow we'll start to do some optics, and I'll teach a non-scalable way to do quantum computing with photons. And I want to do this so that you kind of understand what is the problem about resources in quantum computing. We use photons, send them through different paths. They will do some operations, but then I will tell you at the end of the lecture tomorrow, yeah, if you try to get more and more qubits in there, the number of paths will go up exponentially. So usually you're not teaching something that doesn't work. But I think it's important because physicists don't really get in their mind this importance of having counting the resources. And so I will do this, and it'll be an introduction to the talk on Thursday, which is on linear optics quantum computing, and how to turn it using photons in a scalable way when we take into account the nonlinearity of detectors. And on Friday, I will talk about using nuclear magnetic resonance. So these three here are about implementations of quantum information processing. And I chose these three because I've worked in these three and I know them kind of relatively well. Okay, so summary of the last lecture. After an introduction, I talked about what is a qubit. So is a qubit is a quantum system whose observable are the Pauli matrices. And quite often we can think about one particular way of getting qubits is when we have a physical system with two levels. And so we get some wave function for one qubit. The Hilbert space is the complex plane, two dimension. And an example of this, you can write one wave function. And I wrote this yesterday with a mistake. When I wrote it, I had the factor of theta here, not theta over 2. And you remember that if we do have the blocks here, and then I hope you'll get very familiar with block sphere because I'll use it quite often. If we have a state, is can be thought as a point on the surface of that sphere. There's an angle theta with the vertical axis. The north pole is 0, the south pole is 1. This angle is theta. And if we project this on the xy plane, the angle phi is this one, right? And there's also a global phase that we cannot measure in quantum mechanics. We never have the global phase. But sometimes you have to watch out if you have a second qubit, then you have to watch out to be sure that they have all the phases at the right place. There's another way to write wave function instead of using state or pure state. When we think about having systems which are not isolated, we use density matrices. And if I take that state and I write the density matrix which corresponds to it, we have something which is of that form. And in this notation, it is really theta and not theta over 2. Okay, x, y, z are the polymatrices. And so when you think about this, okay, for a pure state, and these things kind of go up to, sum up to 1, it is really the projection in this x, y, z plane. So you can really think about this Hilbert space as what are the coefficients really of these operators. We saw 1 and 2 qubit gates, although 1 qubit gate is a rotation of that that sphere to another kind of position. So one qubit gate, it's described by U2. And if we also looked at one particular gate, the control knot, and then we'll come back to this at the end of this lecture. The 2x2 matrices. I also, at the end of the lecture, we finished by looking at measurements. What does it mean to have measurement? I'll come back to this in 1 second. But I look at the test of Born's rule. In the measurement, we have the probability which is proportional to wave function or a component wave function squared. And I should have given you a reference if you want to learn more about something which would violate quantum mechanics. Paper by Raphael Sorkin, Modern Physics Letters, A93119-1994, and then an experimental implementation, Orbassi Sina, which was at Waterloo. And it's Science 329-418-2010. Okay, so if you want to learn more, this is just a reference. So what we're going to do today, we'll look at a few algorithms where quantum mechanics makes a difference. So my goal is to convince you that there's something interesting on quantum information processing. And then later on, we'll go to kind of a more complex algorithm, but this two really interesting protocols called super dense coding and teleportation. To understand super dense coding, we come back to measurements. So in general quantum mechanics, if you write a wave function psi is equal to the sum over degrees of freedom x, 8x to this, then when we measure, we project in one of these states x, get the state x, the eigenstate of this operator, with probability ax model square. Okay? Now, I should have stopped and ask you, do you have any questions about last lecture yesterday? That's good? So, we have this. Now, there's a really interesting point about quantum mechanics. Suppose that we have a state of this form here. So let's say that we have a qubit. And we go and get a measurement. We get a measurement, we get, so measuring the state 0 and 1, so we're going to get 0 or 1. And we get, therefore, one bit of information by measuring there. Right? So by measuring that state in quantum mechanics, we don't know alpha and beta. So if you measure the state, let's say we try to measure the state, so this is the observable, then if you get 0, well, you know that if you get something, you know that if you get the state 0, then you know that the coefficient alpha is not equal to 0, but it's the only thing that you know. So if you want to find alpha and beta, you have to go and make many measurements. So So you have somebody which prepares that state, and then you make many measurements, and then you'll get estimate of alpha and beta. So when you look at this, really, and you describe this, however, on the block sphere, alpha and beta is our Contius number. So how many bits do you need to describe alpha and beta in general? Try something. One? So if you write this in binary, how many binary? Or I write this in decimal.
It's arbitrary number.
It's what?
Isn't it arbitrary number? Like you can take up maybe.
Exactly. So there's an infinite, in some sense, there's an infinite amount of information in here. Because alpha can be 0, 1, 0, 7, anything. So in that state, there's an infinite amount of information. But when we make a measurement, we can extract only one bit. And if you want to know the next bit of information, you do the experiment again, you do it again and again, and then you get some approximation of that state by doing the measurement again and again and again and again. And this is something which is kind of peculiar. And you'll see this in a second. That leads to interesting consequences. And the consequences, one of them, is related to quantum teleportation, but before we'll look at super dense coding. Okay. In fact, I should point out also that there's a theorem that if you send a qubit to another person and you say how much information can this person gather, there's a theorem called Holleavoe theorem in the 1970s, which really say you cannot send more than one classical bit of information using one qubit. And this is a bit puzzling because you say, where is this power coming from of that I mentioned yesterday? And I hope that as we go, you'll find part of the answer. But I should also warn you that we don't fully understand why quantum computers are more powerful than classical computers. We just have example of where we can do something with them that we don't know how to do classically. Okay. So what I want to show you is that although I told you that you can extract only one qubit, one bit of information when you measure this, I'll show you that if you add one piece of resource, an entangled state, that is shared between two people, so you have Alice and you have Bob. Alice has, and they share one entangled state, so I'm going to write this in this way. By doing something to her qubit, Alice can send it to Bob, and Bob will get two classical bits of information. Well, that's a bit puzzling. So how does that work? Now, if this bit would not be entangled, she could not be doing this. But because it is entangled, she can use that resource to send more than one classical bit of information. Okay. If I mention the word entangled state, do you know what I have a rough idea of what I mean if I ask you to give me a Bell state or an entangled state? Okay, you guys are too quiet. Is there somebody who doesn't know what I mean? So you're both in the superposition of being quiet on both sides. So that's not good. Usually people raise their hand in their superposition of understanding and not understanding at the same time. But so suppose that they share a state which I'm going to call beta 0,0, which is 1 over square root of 2 of 0a, 0b, plus 1a, and 1b. Okay? And in a few seconds, I'm going to put these two cats together and call it 0,0 and 1,1, and I'm going to drop a and b, but the first qubit is Alice, the second is Bob. Okay? Now, we're going to look at what happens if Alice does nothing to a qubit. And obviously, we'll get that state, okay, which is equal to define this as beta 0, 0. If she applies the x operator on beta 0, 0, then x on this, what am I going to get? Okay, for the second qubit?
Zero.
Zero, because we're not doing anything. And the next one is?
Zero, one.
Perfect. And then we're going to call this beta 0, 1. Now, assume that she's doing z. On beta 0, 0, she's going to get what?
Minus.
Perfect. And the third one is she applies both. She is applying both. So x in first, and then so it should be something like this plus 0, 1, right? And we call this beta 1, 1. Now, can somebody tell me there's something peculiar about these four states? There's something which is, try something. It's okay if you don't get the right answers. That's it. Okay? Well, they're orthogonal. Now, yesterday I mentioned to somebody about addition of angular momentum. So here I'm going to make a little bracket. I open the parenthesis. If you do add angular momentum, there is this state here, okay, is a little bit special. Okay, it's you add two qubits in here, and you add them so that this state is the total spin zero of the two system, and those are called the singlet. If you look at the total angular momentum, these are spin ones. Usually you would see the spin one as 1, 1, 0, 0, and then that's for superposition. Here is a different linear combination of those. These are spin ones, okay? So this is just a remark, and maybe on the last week when we talk about error correction, we'll look at some properties coming back to this. Okay, so they are orthogonal. So this allows Bob to do something a little bit special. So now that Alice has done this operation, she can send her quantum bit to Bob. Bob gets these four states, and he can make a measurement that distinguishes each of these states separately. So the measurement is he's going to measure one of his measurement is, I'll try to measure this. And if Alice has done nothing, indeed he'll get that answer. Or he's going to measure this, or the other one, or this. And because these measurements are orthogonal to each other, he can distinguish them. And because we have four possibilities that correspond to two bits of information, which I've encoded implicitly in this subscript there. Okay? So now let's think about what we've done. We started with, I've mentioned to you that with one qubit, when you measure them, you can extract one bit per measurement. Okay? So Alice sends only one bit, so naively you would think Bob can only extract one bit of information. But I had mentioned that that bit was entangled with this one. And by doing one of these four operations, then Bob can get that qubit and distinguish what exactly this operation is being done. There's another really peculiar thing in here, is that these operations don't commute, x and z, but you can distinguish their effect exactly when it acts on these, on this higher Hilbert space. And again, this is something we'll kind of see again a little bit later on. Okay. What I want to do now is that I'm going to rewrite this protocol in the language of quantum circuit. And so this is a practice for you guys to learn a little bit about what these quantum circuits. So maybe I should back up a little bit. Have you guys, yesterday I mentioned about this quantum circuit where we have lines where time goes this way, qubit are this way, and then make little squiggles on them to explain what we do. Have you seen this in some other of the Psi lecture up now? You've seen it? Is there somebody who hasn't seen it? And it's okay to say, I haven't seen it. Like, if you've all seen it, then I'm not going to kind of do it for nothing. Okay, you guys are too quiet. I have to find a way to Okay, I assume that you've not all seen it, so I'm going to do it, and you throw me a chalk or something like this if you kind of follow it. So the first thing that we did is that we created that state V00. So suppose I have two qubits here, 0 and 0, and a state 0. I want to create the state 00 plus 1, 1. How would you do that?
Hadamard, yes.
So if we put that Hadamard here, we'll take that state 0, and then we'll transform it into 0 plus 1. Okay? Because you remember that Hadamard is 1, 1, 1 minus 1, 1 over the square. Okay? Then what do we do? What is the next operation?
C naught.
Okay? So by this, we've done a state prep. Okay, we've created beta 00. Now, Alice is doing one of these operations here. Okay, so I'm going to write this as a kind of box. I'm going to put a question mark, because she's doing one of the four things, and she's hiding it from you, so you don't know exactly what she's doing. And then what Bob does, he's measuring in one of these bases. But when I say by convention, he can measure only in the 0-1 basis. So how can he transform his basis to the Bell basis? So he can measure only in 0 and 1, but you have this toolkit, you have this quantum computer who can do any kind of operation on your system. So you can do the inverse of what you've done here. Here you've created the Bell state out of the 0-0. You can do the inverse. A control knot and an Hadamard. And this is equivalent to measure in a Bell basis. Okay? So it's just a change of basis that you've done. And sometimes you can do it in an abstract way. Here you do it physically on your quantum system. So you have this gate. And now here's the really neat thing. So you have this gate. You have this inverse here. And you have this operation here, which corresponds to 1, x, z, or combination of z and x. OK? So.
I'm sorry. I have a question.
Yep.
When you say that Bob can do the measurement on the Bell state, he has the control only on one qubit.
Really good point. That diagram doesn't help very well. I said this was Alice, this is Bob, okay? But I did mention, and maybe I should. I said here is that Alice is going to send her qubit to Bob. Okay? So she does something to it,
okay,
and then she sends her qubit to Bob so that Bob has these two qubits, and he can make the measurement of the two qubits. And my diagram here leave this a little bit in some misleading way. So I have to say that this is Bob now, okay? So I need another kind of dimension to say Alice is throwing a qubit, sending it to Bob. Bob has these two qubits, and he can make a measurement to it, and this is the operation that he has. Okay? So the surprising thing is that if you would not know that they have been entangled, these two qubits, Alice sends one qubit, Bob gets two classical bits of information. But now that you know that they've been entangled, you start to understand a little bit how it's being done. Okay? Now, there is something which is called conjugation of an operation, and I'm going to use that term again from time to time. If you have an operator X, and you're doing U dagger on it, I'm going to say I'm conjugating X by U and U dagger. Okay? Just simple term, and it's going to happen in a refraction. Now, from that circuit, you see that I'm conjugating this operation, which is Adamar and control not. And this is exactly the inverse of this. And this, because this is real and this is real, U dagger turns out to be equal to U. And you can see this, that if you have U times U dagger, you should have 1. And if this is 1, nothing happened. These control not are going to cancel each other. The Adamar, when you do it twice, it cancels each other. Right? So now, I had these four operations, 1, x, z, and zx, okay? What I want to show you is that if I do this conjugation, if I start by 1 tensor 1, which was the first operation, and then I conjugate it, okay? As I told you, I do nothing here. These two control not cancel each other. These two LMR cancel each other. I get this. If you have x tensor 1, and I conjugate it, okay, then you have a x here, okay? And I'm not going to leave this as a smaller homework to you, just give you the idea of how it works. If you have an x operator here, it's going to flip the bit of this one. So when you do the control not, it will flip it at the wrong time, okay? So if you go and make the whole calculation of this, what you'll get is that after the control not, you get xx. And then you do a Hadamard. So what does Hadamard on x do? So let's do it by hand. And if I do a few of these things, I'm going to run out of time, but at least you'll understand what I mean. So you remember that this is 1, 1, 1, minus 1. This is 0, 1, 1, 0. And this one is 1, 1, 1, minus 1. And there's this 1 over square root of 2 here. There's 1 over square root of 2 here, so I'm going to put it this way, right? So I multiply this thing, 0, 0, 1, here, so I get 1 minus 1, 1, 1, which multiply 1, 1, 1, minus 1. So I've multiplied these two, I got this. And you guys have to check to be sure I don't make minus sign errors or forget factors of 2 here and there. And if I'm going too fast, you stop me. But again, it's just 2 by 2 matrices multiplication. If I do it here, multiply 1, 1 by 1, 1, I get 2. At the bottom, the 1 and the minus 1 cancel each other. I get 0. 1 minus 1 here gives me 0. And 1 and 1 at the bottom gives me minus 2. There's a factor of 2. It's 1, 0, 0 minus 1. And this is? OK, so if I take an LMR, I conjugate it I take x, I conjugate it by LMR, I get z. Now, you should know this one. If I take this, what do I get? I get x. Because h times h square You square it, it's equal to 1. So you get back to the same thing. So x goes to z and z to x. So this is what ADAMR is doing. So when you arrive here, all of this should go this part here. The x, this one here, is going to turn into a z. So I get z times x. Is that OK if I erase this? Because I want to continue my line down there.
Yes.
Shout if I at some point I erase at the wrong time. So if I have z tensor 1, if you have a z that comes to control not, it's just changing the phase. It is not going to change anything there. So it turns out it will give me a z and 1 here. I do ADAMR to it, gives me so you get an x there. And then if I apply z and x, these two operators one by one, which is the same thing as applying iy, going this. So there's a trick of doing this. I have u tensor z x u dagger. I can insert in here u dagger u, because u dagger u is equal to 1. So it's u z u dagger u x u. And we've already calculated the first, this one here, and this one is here. So we can just multiply both of them to get the answer. And then z times x is y tensor x. OK? From that point of view, once you've done all this calculation with that circuit, it's easy that you're transmitting 2 bits of information. Because if you all put this together, this take your 0, 0, and leave this to 0, 0. If you put this together, oops. This takes a 0 bit and the one transform it to this. This one gives you this, right? And this one flips both of them with a phase in front, which we don't care. So here's your 2 bits of information that that's coming. So when you look at this, it looks like a trivial circuit that you're doing. What is not trivial is the physics part of it, that you've done this in a different order when Alice and Bob did this protocol. They first entangle this. They split their EPR. Alice does something unusual, one of these 4 operations, and then she sends it after. But there's no mystery of where the information comes in when you think about the circuit. Okay? So that was the first protocol. Okay, questions?
When we do the conjugate thingy, so it's equivalent to doing nothing. But we start with the 0 and 1 state, and why we get 0 and 0?
So you have to be explicit of which point you
In the first line.
This one?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's equivalent to doing nothing, identity tensor identity, but why we get 0, 0 instead of 0, 1?
Because we started with the qubits in 0 and 0 here. Sorry.
Okay.
And that you're telling me that I should be slightly more careful when I write my 0s and 1s. Now, I could turn it around saying, I'm just checking that you guys are awake. And you are, so good. So I'll be more careful. So you understand that part? So now let's go to teleportation. So that will be a slightly different protocol. Okay. And here's the idea. Alice as a state. Psi. So it's alpha 0 plus beta 1. How many bits of information do I need to describe that state? You said that a few minutes ago. Perfect. So if you want to describe that state, in principle, you would need infinite number of bits. Bob has an untangled state. He takes one of it. So I'm going to put this like this. He has these two untangled states. So we have three qubits now. He takes one of his qubits. And now I'm going to do something that might puzzle you a little bit. Before I had time going this way. But to describe this protocol, I'm going to put the time going this way. And the reason I'm doing this is one of your exercises this afternoon or Thursday is to write the quantum circuit equivalent of this. So then you'll have time going this way. So he has these two bits. They are entangled. He sends one to Alice. Alice takes her bit. Let's say she's not moving. This bit comes here. She's going to make a measurement in the Bell basis. Okay? So how many bits of information does she get out of the Bell measurement? It's two bits. So she gets two bits. So she's going to measure either V00, V0, U00, V01, V11, or V10, or V11. With her two bits of information, I'm going to put this as a plain line. I'm going to take the blue for classical. So she's going to send her two bits, classical, to Bob. And then with these two, there'll be a conditional gate on this one. And then you will get psi, which is alpha 0 plus beta 1. OK? And do you believe me? So there's a part of you who should say no, because I haven't gone through. But maybe you've heard about teleportation, so you might say that it's not totally a wacky thing. But this is what I'm going to convince you, that he gets it. Why is this surprising? Because the alpha and beta takes an infinite number of bits. And Alice has exchanged only two classical bits. And had shared an entangled state, a piece of an entangled state. So the entangled state by itself contains no information. It just contains some kind of correlation between these two bits. But it's totally independent of what psi is. Then you make a measurement. You get two classical bits. You do something. You get the state psi. And if you really think, you have this measurement here, in some sense, the information is destroyed because you get only four answers, or two bits, and the state reappears there. And if you don't do that transformation, then the state is totally mixed. But if you do the right transformation, you get back the state there. So this is something that you cannot do classically. It's a bit puzzling of how it happens. So you transfer information from one location to another without having to go to the space in between these two locations. And you can do this because of entanglement. So you should be saying, wow, thinking about this. It takes a little bit of time to realize that this is an unusual protocol. So let's go to the math of this. Okay? So I'm going to write this. This is Alice. This is the state of Bob. Okay, and Bob is going to send her bit there. So the first two bits is what Alice will have, and she will make a measurement. So I can rewrite this as 1 over square root of 2, because B0 is defined that way, of alpha 0 plus beta 1, 0, 0, plus 1, 1. OK? And what I'm going to do is rewrite this in terms of Bell state for the first two qubits multiplied by a third state for the last qubit. And I will rearrange it in such a way so that it seems obvious what Bob and Alice do. So let's write this at length. Alpha 0, 0, 0. So I'll multiply this. Alpha 0, 1, 1 plus beta 1, 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1, 1. And you guys, you stop me if I either do something wrong, and should I test you? Or if the words that I say don't agree. So here I have 0, 0, and here I have 0, 1. So I'm going to write this as alpha, beta, 0, 0, plus beta, 0, 1, which multiplies 0, plus alpha, beta, 0, 1, plus beta, 1, 1, which multiply 1, plus beta 0, 1, minus beta 1, 1, which multiply 0, plus beta 0, 0, beta 1, 0. There should be a 1 there. OK. So you remember what the beta 0, beta 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. And so if you add 0, 0, and 0, 1.
Beta 1, 0. According to the definitions up there. Right?
So am I? I am making a sign mistake. So to get this 0, 0, I need to add. It's the first and the third. And there's a minus sign between the two. So the 1, 1 part disappears. And I would get only the 0, 0 part here. So it is really this, right? OK? And then you can do the same thing for the next part. OK? And there are, now we're going to add the 0, 1 and the 1, 1. There's a minus sign, so we get only the 0, 1 part, which is what we need here. And so we do this for all the different parts. So we just add them one by one. OK. And now we group the terms which are in terms of the Bell state. So I'm going to take this state and this part. OK. So I have beta 0, 0, which multiply alpha 0 plus beta 1 plus beta 0, 1, alpha 1 plus beta 0 plus beta 1, 0, alpha 0 minus beta 1 plus beta 1, 1, alpha 1 minus beta 0. OK? So now, remember that when I wrote this state here, it was beta 0, 0 on qubit 2 and 3. And here, when I write this beta 0, 0, it's on qubit 1 and 2. So I should, to be really careful, I should put little index here. But then I get a lot of index. And the more index I put, the more chance I make it wrong somewhere. But you have to understand exactly how I've made that expansion. Okay? Good? So now, if you look at this state, it looks pretty much like psi, except it gets modified a little bit. Now, this one is psi multiplied by the unit matrix. Okay? This one is psi multiplied by the x operator. This one is psi multiplied by the z operator. And this one is the combination of both. I think it's Z first and X second. Right? So now you can see how does Bob recover the information. Alice is going to make a measurement of the first two qubits. And it turns out that she has a quarter of a chance of measuring this, a quarter of a chance of measuring that, a quarter of chance of measuring that, a quarter of measuring that. So make your pick. Which one does she get? Last one. And she got to get the first one or what? So he's a random number generator. Thank you. It's OK at this part to have a random number generator. It's in questions of the tutorial. It shouldn't be totally random. So Bob has got this. And he knows that Alice has measured this because she has sent her two bits. So he just has to do operation X. It's going to cancel that one and Z and cancel this one. Because if you square these things, you get the same statement. Okay? If you would have got this one, then you just do the exploration. So when Bob gets this, this little box here is one of these four operations, okay, depending on what state that is. And then he gets back that state. The mathematics is quite simple, but what it means physically is quite surprising. Are you stunned? Okay, you're so stunned that you cannot say a word. Okay, so this is what quantum teleportation is about. And in one of the lectures, you'll turn this into making a quantum circuit very similar to this. You'll do an entanglement, you'll do a measurement. Instead of having two qubits, you'll have three and see how it works in that quantum circuit and make this happen. Okay? Now, if you're really interested to look at something which is interesting also, is we have a density matrix here of three qubits. So I'm going to write this as psi 1, 2, 3, which is different than the psi, which was only of one qubit, right? So you have a general state. Well, maybe I'll call it phi, not to confuse it, that one. Okay. If you take the trace over qubit 1 and 2, of the state here, okay, before, without knowing what Alice has measured, if you make that trace, then you get this, the unit matrix. So if you don't do the right measurement, Bob, if you don't know what Alice has measured, Bob has no information to that state psi, which would be OK, because before he sends it, send two bit, there's no way that Bob can know this, because no information came out at all from there. But once he gets his two bits, then you get the right piece of information. Now, once the other interesting things is if you sum over the third qubit, you should get a unit density matrix also. There should be no information left. When you get the state beta 0 in there, that state of the first two qubit has no information. And so in some sense, the information gets destroyed by that state. Okay. Once you've made the measurement, you get one of those, beta 0. It has no information related to alpha and beta. Okay. The information is destroyed there and appear there. And that's essential, because if there would be part of the information that would be there and there, there'll be some kind of copy of information. And quantum mechanics doesn't allow to copy information. And this is the way I'm going to finish right now, by writing something on what is called a no-cloning theorem. So the idea behind a no-cloning theorem is that we cannot photocopy quantum information. So a photocopier is a machine where whatever information is your piece of paper, you put it on the machine, you push the button, second copy comes out. How do we write this in terms of quantum systems? We would say, suppose that you have a quantum state. You guys have a quantum state, and I'm trying to I see a few people still writing this. Should I wait for a second, or everybody's done with this? You good? Yeah. So let's go back to this. Either you or maybe I'll say me, I have a quantum state. You guys really want to know my quantum state. And you say maybe you can sneak at night and try to copy it and go away with it. So you start with a state which is blank. And I put zero here. It could be any other state. We'll say zero. And what you want to find is a unitary operator, which gives me this for any state. And if you do this, then you can sneak away with your copy of the state, and then I'll never know that you came and look at me, and you can outsmart me in the future. Unfortunately, you cannot do that. And here's a proof of it. Suppose that I would have another state. This unitary transformation would tell me that I would have this. But I started with this. Before I did the unitary transformation. And let's assume that there's a certain overlap between these two states. Okay? Now, I introduce you, dagger you here, and because this is unitary, well, I'm not doing anything. So I apply the u on this side, I apply the u dagger on the left side, the u on the right side, and this should give me psi, phi, phi. Okay? But I told you that psi, phi is some complex number. And here, once I've applied this, this is equal to c squared. And I would need to have c equal to c squared. And if you solve that, what do you get? C is equal to c squared. What is the value of c?
0 and 1.
So c is equal to 0 or c is equal to 1, which means the states are orthogonal or exactly the same. But in general quantum mechanics, we have superposition of states. So this doesn't work. Okay. And so once you know this, that there's an occluding theorem, you go back to this and you say, yeah, there's something which is really neat about this protocol is kind of all consistent, not surprisingly. You cannot copy that information. And until you know the measurement there, you know nothing about the states of that other size. Okay? Questions? So I just have 5 minutes. So I'll just introduce what I'm going to do tomorrow. So I'll go back to classical computing and talk about circuits which are reversible. Talk a little bit also about universality. Okay. And let's first make a I'll do this. And okay, so I'm going to say just a few things. The reason why we want to use this is next week we'll talk a little bit about complexity theory. And the idea of complexity theory is to try to assess how much resources you're using to do certain computation. So in order to do this, you have to define what the resource is. So when you do a quantum computation, one resource is the number of quantum bits that you have. Another resource is what are the operations that you do. So how do you quantify the number of operations that you do? You give a set of operations, which we call universal, from which you can construct any kind of algorithm. So we need to go and define this. Same thing was done for classical computing in the 1950s and 60s. And then here's a set, which is universal for classical computing. The AND gate. So we have function which is 0 and 1, binary functions. And so this are zeros or ones, x and y, and you just take the n of two of those. There's a gate which is the OR gate. So you take two input, and you do x or y. Right? There's a gate which is the NOT gate. And there's a gate which is called the fan-out. So you take x, and you give two of those. So it's like a copy of a state. So classically, you can copy when you're 0 and 1 because the states are orthogonal. We know in quantum mechanics, we want to have this. But classically, we can do this. Okay. In fact, there's a smaller set of this. And so you can do anything you want with these. You can do any computation which would go from, okay, a function of 1 and n of these bits to 0, 1 with m bit finally. Okay. There's a slightly smaller set of universal gate, which is called the NAND gate. Okay. So it takes the AND and the NOT of two gates. And the fan out that we mentioned. Okay? And it turns out that what transistors do in your computer or your cell phone is exactly these gates here. Okay? So it's only these simple things, which is pretty amazing, that these two operations can do all the information processing that you do. So the big Google farm somewhere in Colorado is done by doing only this kind of little switch kind of in your devices. Hmm? Now, you will remark that this gate, for example, or this one, are not reversible. That if I give you the answer here, you cannot know what x and y are. Okay. But we know that quantum mechanics is reversible. So we cannot really use this. In fact, in the 1960s, Rolf Landauer was at IBM, was worrying about this. And he had this vague argument saying that if things are not reversible, they will create entropy. And entropy will create heat. And if you create heat, and you are shrinking the size of your transistors, you'll get into trouble. You'll get in trouble because suppose that you're doing always the same computation, but your system gets smaller and smaller and smaller. The same amount of heat has to be dissipated, but the surface is smaller and smaller so that you'll need to have a bigger and bigger fan to dissipate the energy on your device. And you've all noticed that if you put your laptop on your lap and you compute at some point, it gets hot. It's because of these things are not reversible. So people in the 60s and 70s started to think, can we do computation reversibly? And they wanted to be sure that you could do this reversibly without using an amount of extra bits, which would grow up exponentially. If you had to suffer that consequence, then you're stuck about shrinking devices. And so in the 70s, Charlie Bennett, who was at IBM also, found a way of how to do this. And he was working with other colleagues. One of them is Toffoli, who showed a gate from which we can obtain all of those, but not with two inputs, but with three. And there's a gate called the Toffoli gate. Which is a gate which has three input. And it's a control NOT. So similar to the control NOT that we talked about, except that here you have two controls. And you flip that bit only if these two controls are one. And if the two controls are not both ones, you don't do anything. So it's a pretty simple gate. And it turns out that you can take that gate, and you can do any of those by having a specific input on one of them. Okay? For example, if you want to do the NOT gate here, you can put the input. So let's say you have a bit of information here. I'm going to put it as a question mark, a 0 or 1. If you put this 1 and 1 in here, you'll do a NOT gate here. okay? And then you can work, what are the other ones? That, what are the other inputs that you have to, and make this reversibly? Now, you remember yesterday when I had this little clip of Feynman, and he says that you don't need 10 to the 11 atoms, you need only 3? This is why he mentioned 3. Because if you want to do classical computing, and you want to have a universal, reversible set of gates, you need 3 of them. Okay? But interestingly, if you do quantum computing, you need only 2. Because you use 1 qubit in superpositions of 0 and 1s, and then you can create other state that way, which is quite a surprising result of this. Okay? So time has passed. I will make just a few more comments tomorrow about reversible classical computing, universality, and then I'll start to talk about implementation of quantum computation. Any questions? Pace? Too fast, too slow? Okay. It's good? Okay, lunchtime.